Welcome to the Cowboy Chronicles, the Oklahoma State podcast powered by the Oklahoman and brought to you by Zaxby's. Cure your craving. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com. I am your host, Scott Wright, joined by Jenny Carlson. Jenny, practice is here. They're on the field. It's an exciting time for Oklahoma State fans. Got a lot of things to get to. We're going to get to some listener questions at the end of the show today. But let's jump into a position that a lot of people talk about at Oklahoma State, but not necessarily in a way of concern. That being the receivers, they've got Tylan Wallace back, a Biletnikoff finalist from a year ago. They've got Dylan Stoner back, who's been really solid for two straight years. Landon Wolf, who's really emerging. Got one spot to fill on the other side of the field, and that's, I think, one of the most intriguing battles, position battles, really across the board.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of guys we don't know a whole lot about.
Yeah. And you know what? I think regardless of who secures that spot, he's going to look completely different than the guy that held the job last year.
Yeah.
Tyron Johnson was obviously in that other spot. And it sounds like the guys that are in the mix for that look nothing like Tyron Johnson.
Right.
And that's no knock on Tyron Johnson. No knock on these guys. Just physically, the three guys that sound to be in the mix are 6'6", 6'5", 6'5".
Yeah.
That's not Tyron Johnson.
No.
the three guys I'm referring to, Patrick McCoffman, the product from Douglas, who was hurt a year ago, was in the mix prior to tearing his knee, and is now back in the mix. Also, C.J. Moore from the Tulsa area, a guy that redshirted, played in the spring, whatever they called that, scrimmage practice. And I think a lot of people were really impressed by him. And then you've got a new guy in Jordan McCray, the grad transfer from South Alabama, who you've written about, talked to too, Scott. And it sounds like those are the three guys, while very similar height-wise, very different in how they would occupy that spot, that X receiver, as Casey Dunn calls it. And none of them would do it like Tyron Johnson. McCoffman, more of a big body, played basketball in high school, more of a blocky out sort of guy, can really fill up space and get good position out in space. So he would be more of a bigger body in that role. He's the 6'6 of the three of them. Then you're looking at C.J. Moore, who's added weight since he arrived in Stillwater, but still very slight build, but has sort of a smaller, has the movement of a smaller receiver. So he's more of that agile a guy. And then Jordan McCray, by the sound of it, kind of somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as speedy and agile as C.J. Moore, but not as sort of grinding as Patrick McCoffman. So, if you want to read between the lines, it sounds like Jordan McCray has maybe got the upper hand. Just he's an experienced guy, Scott.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
He takes game action, games of action into preseason camp, where those other two, they haven't had it.
No. Patrick McCoffman, even though he's a redshirt junior, he initially went to NEO as a quarterback. Eventually, in his freshman season, transitions to receiver and had a dozen or so catches. I don't remember his exact stats. And then it appeared he was going into a sophomore season at NEO, but he happens to go to an OSU camp. Casey Dunn falls in love, and he gets a summer scholarship offer. Comes to Oklahoma State, being a guy that didn't show up until late July, he redshirts. Then after his tears his ACL, so he's now in his fourth year of college and he's hardly played any football at all. Actually on the field. So he was a guy that started 4 years at quarterback at Douglas. So there's a lot of raw talent there that's just waiting to be tapped into, but we haven't seen it on the field really yet. C.J. Moore, a redshirt freshman, as you mentioned, looked great in the spring scrimmage. I think we discussed this back then, but is it a blessing or a curse to be the guy that's the spring star?
That's right.
So we'll find out with that. And the interesting thing about Jordan McCray is that news comes out that he's coming to Oklahoma State, and I jump on Google and I'm looking it up and I'm looking at his stats. I'm like, this guy wasn't even South Alabama's, most targeted receiver. And I'm like, okay, so this is just them filling a spot. They could, everybody can use some depth. The way the numbers work out, they needed to add some guys just to try to get up to 85 scholarships. And I thought this was going to be a guy that would come and hang out for a year. And, I don't know, maybe he has some return skills. I didn't know what the guy could do. But like you said, it sounds like he's, either neck and neck or has a slight lead for the starting job right now. Now, of course, it's we're just starting practice right now. We've got a month until they play Oregon State, but it sounds like going into the start of camp, he's the guy that's in the front of this, and that's it's a pretty surprising turn of events to hear Casey Dunn talk about him that way.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I was the same way. You think, well, when he decides to come here, yeah, they've lost Tyron Johnson. Obviously, they lost Jalen McCleskey midstream last year. At that point, Trayson Wallace was still in the mix.
Right.
But, even at that, you're like, they've got guys.
Yeah.
And they'll be fine,
Yeah.
This is okay. That's nice that they, there's a guy that wants to be in their offense. And okay, great. But it sounds like that he's a guy, had he lived in more of the recruiting radius that Oklahoma State tends to look at, he might have been a guy that they would have gone after.
Right.
To hear Casey Dunn, who recruits that position and now is associate head coach, is likely to expand on some of those duties. He talked about, I asked him, I said, how aware were you of Jordan McCray prior to him, getting here? And obviously they played South Alabama, so they saw him. But I said, well, what about as a high school recruit? Because to kind of get the feeling like this guy could be a fit, like, well, why'd you go to South Alabama if he's
right
out there? And the way it was explained was that when they recruit guys, they're looking at 6 hours from Stillwater.
Mm-hmm.
They want the guys that they bring in, unless it's a rare circumstance. As we all know, they've gotten guys from other places outside of that 6 hours. Mason Rudolph comes to mind immediately for me. But they want guys to feel like this is a local connection. They want that in the vast majority of the guys they have on their roster. So unless there's some sort of familial connection or something that makes them stretch beyond that, they're going to stay within that. And so they knew who that guy, they knew Jordan McCray, but he was outside that boundary. So wasn't a guy that they pursued. But in seeing the way he was used at South Alabama, no knock on South Alabama, I don't think, but that was not an offense to use his skill set.
Right.
And now there's a chance that maybe this is the type of offense where he can be used. And I think regardless, if it's him, if it's C.J. Moore, if it's Patrick McCoffman, the height that they could provide and the safety valve that they could provide for Spencer Sanders or Drew Brown.
Yeah.
To me is significant, because you're talking about guys that when you add their wingspan and their leaping ability, if you've got an average DB at 6 foot, yeah, they're going to jump too, but you've already given yourself an extra 8 to 10 inches
right
above that guy. I think that's something I think they were excited about McCoffman last year.
Oh, absolutely.
And then he gets hurt, and now they've really got a chance. And then you add in Jelani Woods.
Right, yeah.
My favorite all-time tall guy in football, potentially. It's just when you've got a new quarterback, to me, those are the type of things that become invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely. And, an interesting thing about that was that you saw Oklahoma State move in the recruiting classes over the last couple of years to get some more tall guys. Not that they hadn't had them before, but they had just kind of run out of them a little bit. And, you know, Mason Rudolph wasn't a guy that necessarily needed a safety blanket. He had James Washington and could throw it over everybody and not have to worry about it. But you look at the way that he used Marcel Aitman in Aitman's senior year, and it became incredibly valuable. And so having a guy like that, you know, Tylan Wallace has the ability to he jumps well, and he has good ball skills and adjusting when the ball's in the air. At the end of the day, he's still 6'1", and there's still a limit to what he can do. And having those guys is going to be, I think incredibly valuable. And you brought up Jelani Woods, and
sorry, I couldn't.
You got to. I mean, he's a guy that I'm very intrigued by, because he's a guy that was just figuring things out last year. And I am curious to see what kind of steps forward he can make after a redshirt freshman season where he made that transition. And Jason McIndoe sounded very excited about him. What can this guy be, Jenny?
Yeah, you know, I think he's an intriguing guy. And you're right. You know, a year ago, I don't know how you felt, but I got the sense like, you know, would they have liked to have him further along before they used him as much as they did?
Right.
Yeah. But he was still such a disruptor out there because of what he could do and because of what he brought every time they snapped the ball and he stood up. They had to have him out there.
Yeah.
And so he played a lot of snaps a year ago. And so you add in that experience, how he was coming along, obviously had that injury late in the year. So we didn't get to see him in the last couple games,
I think
he was out?
Two or three, and then the bowl game.
Yeah, so, I mean, missing some time, but still, you know, having a chance to, you know, sort of test the waters. And now I think you've got to think, if you put yourself in his shoes, his gigantic shoes, but his shoes, and think, you know, he has to recognize that he is so much further along now than he was when he last was on the football field. The strength, the skill, the understanding that he now has compared to where he was then, that confidence has got to be a powerful thing, because he has got to feel like, you know, what he was able to do a year ago, how he was able to affect them, whether catching the ball or blocking. And then you add in, you know, the addition of what he has gained in the offseason. I just got to think he's going to feel like he's been boosted to a whole new level. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see, you know, what he can do. He's obviously got some really good ball skills. You know, as he gets more fluid and more comfortable, you know, how do they use him in you know, different ways? I'm really curious to see that. You know, it's really, you know, we saw him a lot as they, you know, were trying to figure out some things on the offensive line, helping the blocking out there as much as he was. How much more can he be a help? Those sorts of things. And then when you get him down the field, and again, those 6'11", or those, I'm sorry, those 5'11", they wish they were 6'11" in this instance, 5'11", 6 foot DBs. How do you handle that?
Right.
How do you handle that? It just, to me, is a huge matchup advantage for Oklahoma State.
All right, Jenny, let's take a quick break. Be back and talk a little bit of defense. I am Scott Wright, your host of the Cowboy Chronicles podcast, presented by Zaxby's. We are back on the Cowboy Chronicles podcast, presented by Zaxby's. I am Scott Wright, joined by columnist Jenny Carlson. Jenny, we got to speak to Jim Knowles for the first time in a while on Monday. He was joking, because all the coaches were there, and he was joking about how he's not the new guy anymore. Everybody was off talking to the new guys, Sean Gleason and Charlie Dickey, and not the big crowd that Knowles had last year when we first got to speak to him. But
and we all thought, what a great accent! Let's just go ahead and talk. Let me hear you talk there,
yeah.
Philly.
Yeah, exactly. Quick side note. I was really hoping for a better Jersey accent out of Sean Gleason, but that's
there's nothing, is there?
It's not there. It's not there. That's all right. Won't hold it against him. But I was hopeful. But Jim Knowles seems more comfortable in his situation now. Yeah. He didn't seem uncomfortable last year, but you knew that he didn't know exactly what was ahead of him.
Right.
Now he knows what's ahead of him, and seems like he's more prepared to attack what is on his plate this season.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a defense that's completely set at this point. The defensive line's a huge question mark, as we've talked before, Scott. The question of the preseason for the Cowboys: what do they do? How do they get that figured out? But I think the fact that Jim Knowles knows he's not going to go into Big 12 play with a secondary that is largely inexperienced, largely young. They're still pretty young. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Right. I know Rodarius Williams and A.J. Green feels like they've been around forever. But, they've still got some young guys playing in the secondary. But yet the experience that those guys got a year ago was, they learned on the fly. And it wasn't always pretty. But they at least know that they've got experience back there now. And so, to me, I did get to talk to Jim Knowles a little bit about, this is the reverse. A year ago, they had a defensive line that you knew what you had. You had experience, you had talent, you had depth, and they were going to have to hold some things down and give that secondary a chance to sort of figure some things out. Yeah. Now it's the opposite. And, I asked Jim, obviously if you could have 11 returning starters and all sorts of experience everywhere, right, that's the ultimate. But this year and last year, which is better? And he said, a year ago, that defensive line, they got pressure. Fifth, I think, in the country in sacks.
Yeah.
And yet they still got killed by those chunk plays, mm-hmm, because in the Big 12, every play is a chance to score a touchdown,
right,
in the offense's mind.
Yeah.
So that can come back to bite you when you don't have that secondary. So having a secondary that's more capable of handling that is much preferable. They want that defensive line to come along. But I do think some of his ease, it has to be going into year two, but it also has to be what he has available to him this year compared to what it was a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though that defensive line, and we'll get into this more later because one of our reader question or our listener questions revolves around the defensive line, so mm-hmm, I'll save some for that. But the number of guys, the types of guys that he's got that he can do different things with, I think he can be more versatile in what he runs with his defense up front this year. So I think that makes a little bit of a difference as well. Now there's not a Jordan Belford, mm-hmm, on this line, at least that we've seen to this point. So we'll see. And then you got the young safeties, the guys that were thrown into the fire last year, mm-hmm, that getting good reports across the board on all of those guys and what they're doing. You've got two third-year starters at cornerback, and that's just unheard of, yeah, anywhere. Yeah. But especially in the Big 12. Anybody that survives more than 2 years as a starter in the Big 12 has really accomplished something.
Tip of the cap.
At cornerback. So that's going to be a big benefit to Knowles and his defense.
I want to interject this funny tidbit for a sec. I was talking to Tim Duffy, who oversees those guys in the secondary, and we got to talking about A.J. Green and Rodarius Williams a little bit. And I said, you had to play those guys pretty young. Was there ever any point that you thought, oh, boy, maybe the confidence is shot. Maybe I'm going to lose these guys. He said, no. Confidence has never been a problem with those two. He said, back when they were first getting going, he said, there were times I had to be like, guys, that's not acceptable. That's not good. Like, there were times he had to remind them, no, I'm sorry, that's not okay, you know? And so that's because I think we have seen instances before where young guys in the secondary just take it on the chin and take it on the chin, and they can't handle it.
Right.
And they go into a shell, and they're maybe not the player that they could be. And so, while it makes for a funny story,
right,
it's probably a good thing that they had an overabundance of confidence in themselves, because early on, and even early on last year, I mean, let's be honest, when you've got a secondary that's evolving and they just left those guys on their own, there were times throughout the season last year when it could have been, you know, like, ugh, you know, what's going on here? So to have the experience and that confidence, you know, and those, it's going to be interesting to see what do defenses do when you've got two that are so experienced.
Right. Yeah.
Who do you try to go after? What do you try to, what do you try to exploit? There aren't a lot of defenses that you've got two guys that are so similar in experience, ability, all that sort of thing. So it'll be really interesting to see what that looks like come Big 12 play, especially.
Yeah, you know, Rodarius Williams, obviously his brother Greedy Williams in the NFL now. You know, so some of that that cornerback mentality is apparently bred into those guys. And then AJ Green had one of the best answers from Big 12 Media Days that I heard. To just about any question, he got asked what was on his if he had anything on his bucket list, and he said he wants to go skydiving. And some of the reporters kind of probed a little bit deeper, and he talked about he just loves the adrenaline rush. He loves moments when his adrenaline is pumping, and that's what life on the island is like. I mean, if you're not
if you don't embrace it,
exactly,
get off.
Exactly. So he is wired for the situation that he's in. So it's really kind of ideal. It seems for those guys. So.
Yeah, and I'm curious too. You know, we saw last year in the bowl game, you know, against a Missouri offense led by a guy that, you know, drafted in the NFL, a really good quarterback. And we saw the Oklahoma State secondary. I mean, Scott, I think we agree on this. Take a step forward in that game.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, you had some guys get ejected for targeting, multiple. I mean, I didn't ever think we'd see a game where we saw multiple guys, but it happened in that game. And so you kept thinking, oh my gosh, you know, how are they, what are they going to do here?
Right.
And yet guys kept coming in and playing pretty well.
Right.
Missouri was going to move the ball. They were going to score, all of those things. But to have more than maybe Jim Knowles and Tim Duffy were expecting to play, to see, you know, a Bryce Ballas or Kima Siverin get out there. To me, that, you know, that's a good little opening of a window to those guys as players, but also to the coaches to say, you know, what do we got here? You know, how could we maybe, use and shift and all those sorts of things. So that was an interesting, you know, moment there, I think, in the growth of this defense. So I'll be curious to see, do some of those guys that, you know, made some headway in that bowl game that maybe we hadn't thought about all year.
Right.
How do they use that heading into this preseason and on into the non-conference?
All right, one more quick break. We'll dive into the mailbag right after this, Jenny. Remember, you can join the mailbag if you want. Email me, swright@oklahoman.com, or contact me on Twitter, @ScottWrightOK. We'll be right back with the Cowboy Chronicles podcast presented by Zaxby's. We are back on the Cowboy Chronicles podcast presented by Zaxby's. I am Scott Wright, joined by columnist Jenny Carlson. Time for the mailbag, and we will begin with Shelly at Shelly_68 on Twitter. Thank you for jumping in. She says, I won't even think about asking who you think will start, but I will ask, how big a part do you think a dual quarterback system will play in the season?
Yeah, I don't think that by October 1st they're right. playing two quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I think they will play two in the opener. I've come around to believe that more and more. But I think there's a belief that both these guys have done enough to be able to get out there and show what they can do. But at the same time, I also think that there's likely to be some separation once they get out
right.
there. And I'm not saying I have an idea of which way I think it'll go. I tend to think that when you've got a guy who was a five-star recruit like Spencer Sanders, who's had a year to learn and grow and get his mind and body ready to get out there, he'll be that guy ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have – beyond that, that's just my suspicion.
Right.
But, Scott, I don't – can you see him playing two through Big 12 play? I just think these guys are too similar.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see enough benefit in having a situation where this is where Drew fits better, or a situation where this is where Spencer fits better. I think that there will be, like you, I think we'll definitely see both of them at Oregon State, maybe McNeese State. I think that they would like to have one guy by Tulsa, because after Tulsa is a trip to Texas, and you really don't want to have your quarterback battle still going on at that point.
Yeah.
So I do think there will be two quarterbacks played at times. I don't see a two quarterback system being the product of what comes out of this. So,
yeah. You know, when Mike Gundy has talked about this, he doesn't talk about it in terms of Mason Rudolph and J.W. Walsh.
Right.
He's more likely to talk about it in terms of Alex Cate, Brandon Whedon.
Yeah.
If you want to go back into the Wayback Machine,
right.
Cowboy fans, or J.W. and Clint Shelf.
Right.
And, you know, when they use two quarterbacks with Rudolph and J.W., it was because they were maybe not polar opposites on the, you know, quarterback spectrum, but at that point, you had a guy who could really wing it and a guy who was great between the tackles. And so why not figure out a way to use both to the big advantage of that offense? So that is not this. And so what you've got when Gundy's talking about it in references to, hey, we thought Alex Cate had done some things, deserved a chance to show what he could do. Disastrous first half against Colorado on a Thursday night back in the day. Brandon Whedon comes in, saves the day, starts that whole change. So, you know, or Shelf starts against Mississippi State down in Houston, doesn't go great. JW comes back in. That became an injury marred situation, but
right.
that was the thought process. So to me, the reference points being more of guys. And I'm not saying that one of these two is going to bomb. I just think that you've got two guys that have put in the work, put in the time. They like what they potentially could get out of both, and they want to see it on the field in a live situation. To me, that's where this is going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with letting this competition bleed into September a little bit. Now, you've also got the argument that, hey, both of these guys redshirted last year and could have played some, but that's all water near
you're
a bridge.
You're opening up a big wound in
right?
Cowboy Nation,
right.
Scott.
Exactly. We'll move on with the mailbag. Justin on Twitter at J7531. Will our defense improve at all? Our D-line is inexperienced. What can we expect? I do think the defense will be better for all the secondary stuff that we discussed earlier. The defensive line, though, I'm fascinated by because there are a lot of guys that could be involved. A lot of guys that could be key players and possibly some guys that we don't expect who could emerge, guys that that have only played a little bit, somebody like Brock Martin. Mike Scott is a guy I continue to be fascinated by because he just doesn't look like a defensive end when you see him out there. And but he holds up well and makes some plays. Defensive line, Jenny, you anybody that really intrigues you up there?
Well, correct me if you think it's different, but I think the four that are likely to start, Mike Scott, Israel Antoine, Kyle Jr., and who was the fourth guy? I just had him in my head.
Tyler Lacey, Amadou Fofana.
Maybe your four is different than my four.
Maybe so.
Who do you think will be the fourth guy?
I would say I'm gonna say Tyler Lacey ends up being the guy at that other defensive end spot.
Okay.
They're looking for a little bit bigger guy over there, and mm-hmm. he's kind of beefed up some. Joe Bob Clemens told me he thought he was maybe up to about 280. Mm. Amadou Fofana being a guy that's also around that size, about 6'4", 280. I think either one of those guys could start. I think that's going to be a battle.
Brock Martin was the other guy I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Not quite big enough for what they're looking for?
Not on that side. Okay. I think they like him in that weak side spot that they used Jordan Brelford last year. Mm-hmm. So I think him and Mike Scott are going to rotate a lot. I think they'll keep them over there, do the different things that they did with Brelford, moving him to linebacker, mm-hmm. you know, getting him into coverage occasionally, some different things like that. Now, it could go the other way. If it turns out that's your four best, and they're the guys that you want on the field 50 plays a game, that's what you're going to do.
Yeah. So. Yeah, to me, those two transfers, Antoine and Junior, are the two that I'm most curious about. I mean, we know that Antoine, he played defensive line as a true freshman.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, when you look back at some of the great defensive linemen who've played, in our neck of the woods, there aren't many that have done that.
No.
Now, I know it was Colorado. No, it was Pac-12. I get that. But it's still Power 5 major college football.
Yeah.
And he got out there as a true freshman and played well.
Right.
So it's going to take some time. There's going to be an adjustment. I get all of that. But to me, that's going to be really fascinating to see. How does he fit in? How does he acclimate? And then Kyle Jr., a guy you've had a chance to talk to, Scott, who is going to be trying to really not only – make a place for himself on this line, but show what he's capable of for the next level.
Right.
And so a guy with a lot to prove. He didn't get here in the spring. He was obviously still at Bowling Green, mm-hmm. so didn't have the spring. But a cerebral guy, how does that translate? How quickly can he get into the mix? You obviously, if you're in his position, you don't go somewhere you don't think you can get on the field. He knows that they have a need. They knew they had a need. Mm-hmm. So to go get him, to find a guy that they feel like can impact things, I think it's going to be really interesting. And I had a chance to talk to Joe Bob Clemens and Greg Richmond Monday, at the assistance availability that we had. And, I think that they're aware, obviously, that, in the last few years, the narrative over Oklahoma State defensive line has changed so much. Back in the day, decade-ish or so ago, every year was a question mark about the defensive line. Are they going to have the talent? Are they going to have the depth? Who's it going to be? How's it going to go? Then it became, how do you replace this great player? How
right.
do you replace an Ogba? How do you replace a Vincent Taylor? How do you, you've still got all these pieces, but there was this one really great guy. Well,
right.
that's a whole different question.
Yeah.
And now, they are in more of a wholesale, change after losing such a big group of guys. And then obviously they had transfer situation also that hit them there. So, obviously that's a whole different thing that we haven't seen Oklahoma State's defensive line have to
right.
answer for in a while. But at the same time, Joe Bob Clemens, who's the longer tenure of the two of those defensive line coaches, said, I knew this day was coming.
Yeah.
It's not like it snuck up on us. We knew we were going to have a big changeover after the 18 season, so we recruited for it. We developed for it. You're never as ready as you want to be after a situation like that, but he's still talking about we want to have 8, 10 guys, 12 potentially, that we can at some point rotate through during the game.
Yeah.
How comfortable they get and how many guys they ultimately use depends on the guys and how much they show.
Yeah.
But, I still think, they're more in a system and in a place to, that you're not going to be able to replace the talent and the depth that they lost seamlessly. There's going
right.
to be some hiccups, but they don't have new coaches. They don't have a new system. they're gonna at least have some fundamental things going for them mm-hmm. that they can roll through. So I'm curious to see how, especially those transfers, those two transfers, how do they fit in mm-hmm. to that bigger picture of this defensive line?
One fascinating thing about this whole group, and I could see maybe 10 guys rotating in on this defensive line because of the depth that they've added at defensive tackle with those two guys. Mm-hmm. Not a single one of them has started a game in an OSU uniform.
Wow.
Your entire defensive line and their backups. Wow. A couple of quick hitters, and we will wrap things up on the Cowboy Chronicles podcast. One more also from Justin. I think this is going to be a short answer, so that's why I'm bringing it up. Will our special teams be improved? They have been terrifying the last 2 years, honestly, and completely killed us in Bedlam. I have two words that come to my mind when I think of whether OSU's special team is going to be improved. Jenny, I think we're on the same wavelength. Two words.
Tom Hutton.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I gotta get my Aussie accent down. We'll work on that. That needs to be improved. I think special teams will be better. And the last one comes from me because I've asked now the last two podcast guests that I've had the same question.
Okay.
And I want to get your answer. Your answer cannot be the quarterbacks. It cannot be Chuba Hubbard. It cannot be Tylan Wallace.
Okay.
What offensive player are you the most excited to see this season?
Oh, boy. What offensive player am I most excited to see this season?
Or most curious about. Doesn't have to be excited to see.
Well, I got to tell you, until earlier this week, if somebody would have said, what's the name of the guy who transferred from South Alabama, I'd say the guy who transferred from South Alabama. But now I know it's Jordan McCray, and I'm excited to see Jordan McCray.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if he can become – I don't know what he can become.
Right.
Can he do what Marcel Aitman did?
Right.
I think he's going to look a little different doing it. But mm-hmm. if they could get somewhere between Marcel Aitman and Chris Lacy
right.
out of that guy
mm-hmm. –
that'd be a huge, huge advantage for this offense. So, I'm very curious to see what he does.
Yeah, we've already talked about him a lot, so I won't go into my answer again. Plus, everybody that's listened to the last two podcasts has heard it anyway. But Jelani Woods was my answer because I think
can't go wrong with that.
Such a big step that he's going to make, literally, figuratively, and metaphorically, I guess. So that was my answer. That's going to do it for today's podcast. Remember, you can email me, tweet at me. Jump in next week's mailbag. We're doing this every week. Again, email swright@oklahoman.com, on Twitter @ScottWrightOK. Jenny, thank you for joining me.
Got
this
it.
Has been the Cowboy Chronicles podcast presented by Zaxby's.